A week later, of course, you lost your job because there was this altercation with a homosexual couple, a lesbian couple in Rathfarnham.
Who had heard the tape and who were very angry and had every right.
At that stage, did your party know that you had issues with what the apology that was issued prior to this? And did they know at that stage that you felt hard done by?
At that stage, neither I nor they had the transcript to prove I did not say what was alleged to have said. So therefore, we were both based on the same level of knowledge of this.
So just to be clear, you feel now that you should not have apologised?
Of course not, because I don't believe it and I didn't say it. That's the point. There is no evidence to suggest that this can happen. I didn't say it, but the problem was I didn't have the transcript to show I didn't say it.
And should you have resigned as minister?
No. Though I have to say, Enda, I was under enormous pressure for other reasons. Because my wife's condition was continuing to deteriorate, and I suspect that shortly afterwards, maybe a few weeks afterwards, I would have had to have stepped aside to look after. But the point is, I wanted to stand aside for obviously good reasons, that I wanted to look after my wife, and not under this cloud of shame because of an allegation that was made against me, which I did not do.
And are you satisfied with the way this has been dealt with by the DUP?
I have absolutely no option because I could not ask them to do anything to unravel the damage until the police investigation had concluded. And they were in exactly the same situation as I was. They had a tape which they believed to be an accurate reflection of what I said. And I, even though I was confused about it, I thought it was accurate.
So when they were presented with this tape and then you presented the transcript, who did they believe?
Sorry.
When they had this tape and then you said, well, here's the real transcript, did they say, well, the transcript, we're going to believe that and not the extraction?
They were, like myself, quite confused as to whether the transcript and the tape didn't seem to match. I know now how that was done as a result of my meeting with the police last Wednesday. I know exactly what happened and how that tape was dealt with. Therefore, I have an explanation of how the tape was done. I have got the transcript, which is confirmed by the police as accurate and by the journalist. And as a result, I'm very clear and I'm now in a position to clarify the situation.
Just what are your views now then, as they stand, on homosexual couples bringing up children?
I do not support the bringing in legislation in Northern Ireland for homosexuals to adopt. I believe that children are best reared where they have a father and a mother. That's old-fashioned and I know it's controversial, but that is my genuine belief.
And is there any scientific evidence to back up that belief, or is it purely a Christian belief?
It is a Christian belief, but also I believe all the evidence shows that children are best brought up in a loving, stable relationship with a man and a woman. And
What about in a stable relationship with two men or two women? If it's a loving, stable relationship, what's wrong with that?
Because
stability is all that matters, what is wrong with that?
In the Northern Ireland context, we have many more married couples wanting to adopt a baby than babies are available. And if the optimum situation is that children are adopted by a mother and a father, why should we prejudice their right to adopt by widening it out to other relationships? And I still maintain the fact, I'm a product of a happy marriage, no doubt, Enda, you are. And my children are a product of a happy marriage and my grandchildren. And I think that is the optimum. Now, it doesn't always work out that that's possible. But in terms of adoption, when you're placing someone else's child into the care of a couple, why not opt for the best option, which is a husband and a wife or a man and a woman?
And do you still believe that homosexuality is a lifestyle choice?
I'm not going to answer that question, Enda, and I'll tell you why.
Why? You did get into trouble over suggesting that to a couple in Rathfarnham.
Their anger was as a result of the tape. They would not have confronted me had they not heard the tape.
No, their anger was around you suggesting that their relationship was all about a lifestyle choice.
It can be a life choice. Yes, it can be. People can opt to go into homosexual or same-sexual.
So do you believe that people are born gay or opt to be gay?
No, and I'll tell you why I'm not going to answer that. Because there's no opportunity on this broadcasting outlet to have a fair and reasonable and balanced debate on this issue. And I'm not answering because until I have the right to have a fair and balanced debate about this, I am not going to be entrapped by the BBC.
It's not entrapment. You can say what you want people are interested to know what are your views on homosexuality.
And I am here to put the record right as to what I said in Dunpatrick on the 23rd of April, and I'm not opening up the argument any further about my views, which are well known, on the whole issue.
But does it not cut to the heart of all of this? Because it was your views being expressed on a platform that got you into all this difficulty in the first place.
Had there been accurate reporting of what I said, I would not be here and you would not be interviewing me. The point is, there's nothing, it may be a controversial what I said, but certainly it would not have got the widespread coverage because of the attempt by this tape to link my views on gay adoption with my views on what happens to children in controversial and angry divorces. And that's the problem. But I'm not going to widen the whole debate further to bring it to the whole wide audience the issue of what I feel.
But why not?
Because it's not relevant to this debate, because that's a totally different debate. Totally different. And I am not going to allow this programme, which has preset views on this issue, to try and...
Are you worried in case you might say something that you may later regret?
I am certainly not... You're a very clever interviewer, Enda. And I am not going to leave myself in a position where, having clarified one controversy, you try to put me in a corner in order to create another one.
I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to do that.
But the person who normally sits in that seat tends to do that.
Well, he's not here. But what I'm interested to find out now is where does this leave Jim Wales in terms of politics? Do you want to get back into frontline politics?
It leaves Enda that a 33-year career that I worked so hard to build up crashed around my head as a result of a 17-second tape of something I didn't say. And I must feel, I feel a great sense of injustice that that has happened. The damage is done and I have to accept the damage, and it's probably irreparable.
You did say it, but in your view it was misinterpreted what you said, because it was taken in isolation from your complete speech.
You can take any two lines of anyone's speech and ram them together to create a false impression. Had the tape gone on another 2 minutes, wouldn't be having this discussion.
That happens all the time in politics, where politicians say things and extracts are taken from their speech and then they're reported.
But they're not deliberately contrived to create a false sense of what they said. The BBC would never do that, I'd hope. But what has happened here is two separate issues have been rammed together to create the impression that I said that homosexuals abuse their children.
What about your relationship now with your colleagues within the DUP? Because I do note you're talking today in the Belfast Telegraph about you circulated the transcript of what was actually said that night, and very few of your colleagues picked up on it.
Yes, that's true. It came at a very busy time because, remember, we had just concluded an election campaign. And I sent it around my colleagues to try and once I became aware of exactly what I said. Some were too busy. Someone, because it's a very complex issue, except didn't actually understand what I was trying to get at. And as a result, I really didn't get the message out. So that's why I'm taking this opportunity.
And what about Peter Robinson? Did you circulate the transcript?
Yes,
and did he come back to you?
Peter Robinson has been tremendously supportive and helpful to me throughout all of this. Peter, during my wife's illness, has been very, very supportive, very helpful. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a different side to Peter Robinson than the tough, articulate, hard-working leader. I've seen a very human, warm side to Peter, and Peter could not have been more supportive to me over this last few months.
So tell us then who else was supportive within the party.
Well, I haven't actually seen the food article, but I actually named people like George Robinson, Gordon Dunn, the Lagan Valley folk, Willie Humphreys, Stephen Moutrie, backbench friends of mine who have been tremendously supportive, tremendously.
Do you think there was a sense within the party back then that Jim Wales was now a liability?
Based on that tape, if that tape was true, I would believe that Jim Wales is a liability. If I had said what was on that tape, and if I hadn't apologised for it, then I deserve what I got. The point is, I did not say it.
But whenever you produced the evidence, in your opinion, to prove otherwise to your party colleagues, was there still a sense then that Jim Wales was a liability,
yes, because
that he was damaged now beyond repair?
I have to be fair and say there was still a level of confusion within the party, because they had this transcript, but they still had this tape, which is still being played throughout the world. I had friends in London, in Edinburgh and Devon ring me to say had been the second item on their local news. What had I said? Why could I have been so stupid? Of course, there's no chance to recover that situation. It's out there. And even Nick Clegg, the Deputy Prime Minister, in social media was saying, what on earth is Wales saying?
Did you feel toxic?
Based on that tape, I think anyone would have felt toxic. The tape was so crucial. If that tape had not been released in the form that it was, then you and I wouldn't be having this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the toll that all of this has taken on you, Jim, because we do know you, your family are fighting a battle right now, because your wife, Grace, is facing an uphill struggle, really, because of the condition she has.
My wife's been in hospital 24 weeks as a result of two strokes, and Stephen Nolan has covered this story widely and has the Belfast Telegraph very fairly, in my opinion. She's now in the brains unit of one of our leading hospitals, and we've been told she'll never walk again. So now what we're working on is to see what power of memory and recovery of brain functions we can achieve. At the time that I did that Downpatrick interview, things were looking very bleak for Grace. And a few weeks earlier, we had actually been told to expect the worst. I have found myself under the most enormous emotional pressure There are other medical issues in my family as well, which have caused me terrible distress. I've been at home on my own for the first time in 58 years. I'm at home now 5 months on my own. And I must say, to be honest, I find that difficult as well. So there's been huge pressure upon me. But I don't want to use that as an excuse for what's happening.
And how are you coping with that pressure?
I'm finding it extraordinarily difficult. Extraordinarily difficult. And I'm going to say something that I didn't intend to say when I came in here. I came home one night from Londonderry after an event, and I had to drive 82 miles from my home. And I reached shortly after all of these things crashed around my head. And the time I got to Castle Dawson, I was in a very, very bad place. But I'm glad to say I saw that, and I went and I sought treatment. Can I tell you a funny story? Mm-hmm. I sought treatment in a certain hospital. When I walked in, what was the plaque on the wall of that unit? Opened by Jim Wells, Minister of Health. I thought there was an irony there. I got excellent support, and I've come through that. Mm-hmm. And I've come through it, I think, reasonably well. And I would say to other folk out there, if you're facing bereavement are very difficult situations, go and get something done about it.
When you say, Jim, you were in a bad place, what do you mean by that?
I was distraught. I think it's the only word. It's distraught for two reasons. A career that I had spent 33 years to build up had crashed around me. And secondly, distraught by the sense of injustice that it had been destroyed by something I did not do. Mm-hmm. If I had done this, I'd have taken it on the chin and say, well, you made a fool of yourself, you said something stupid, and you're just going to have to move on and accept. But to know that you hadn't done it, I found desperately difficult.
And how dark was that place? What was going through your head, Jim? What were you thinking about?
It's the darkest place I've ever been in my life. It really has. It really was.
To what extent?
Well, not to the extent I was going to do anything silly. I can assure you of that. But to the extent that I realised that if I did not take action soon, I was going to crash. And I went straight for help, and I got it. And I got very good help, I have to say that. I was also distraught about the fact that so many other aspects of my life are crashing around me, some of which I've mentioned and others I haven't. Everything that could have gone wrong in my life in the last 5 months has. But I'm not using that as an excuse for what happened in Downpatrick, and I'm not looking for sympathy. What I'm simply saying is the sense of injustice was overwhelming because I didn't. It's like you being sacked for something that appeared in the Nolan Show and you were on holiday, yet you get the blame. I got the blame for something I did not do, and what the facts in the Down Recorder and the police have shown me I didn't do. But, of course, I accept that my career's in tatters. It's a wreck. I'm a wreck in terms of my political career, and I have to accept that that has happened. And there's nothing I can do, and I think it's irreparable what has happened. But at least what I want to do is I want to clear my name. I want people to know I did not allege what that tape does, and that tape is what has destroyed me.
Does that mean that you won't be standing in the next Assembly election?
My decision to stand in the Assembly election, just going to say that the folk in South Down have been magnificent, stood right behind me. I have no difficulty with the constituency about this. And I have been surprised. The first six people who rung me to support me were from the nationalist community in South Down. And that I thought was lovely. But many unionists have as well. I have had no problems whatsoever in South Down. The issue of whether I stand next time round will depend entirely on my wife's health. When she gets out of the brains injury unit, maybe in September, what caring package can we put in for it? I have been married to Grace for 32 years. Most of that 32 years I've been in politics. There's been many lonely dark nights where I haven't been there. Many days, whole weeks I've been away somewhere. She stood behind me for 32 years, and I'm going to stand behind her as well. So if it requires me that I have to leave politics to look after, that'll be done. It may be I don't need to. I just don't know. And I'm not going to make any further mistakes by trying to say what I think is going to happen in September. The family as a whole, I've got a loving family here, super folk, they've been so supportive of me, are going to sit down and see what is the best way to look after Grace when she comes home. And I can't make a prediction yet as to what's going to happen.
And just for those people who don't know, Jim, Grace has a very rare condition, hasn't she? I think only 50 people worldwide...
Has had the operation, yes.
Has had the operation that Grace has had. And it evolves around suffering two strokes.
Yes, Grace has had a hole in the heart. The result of that is that she had strokes on both sides of the brain, which is incredibly unusual. The first stroke, she was making dramatic recovery. The second stroke, and I was present when it happened, has done very, very significant damage to her brain. She's in a brain unit where she's surrounded by a lot of young fellows who've come off motorcycles, and it's very distressing to see it. That has caused huge complications as to her treatment. But we have been told that she'll never walk again. That was a very tearful and difficult meeting. And the family found that very, very hard to accept. But we do now accept that she won't walk again, and the house has to be totally transformed to look after her.
And how is she dealing with it all?
I don't think Grace is aware of any of this. Grace is not aware, for instance, of my resignation as a minister or anything like that. Grace is, to some extent, in a world of her own. And we're hoping, as a result of the excellent treatment she's receiving, that her understanding, her intelligence, her short-term memory can be restored. But this all happened, my life crashed around me, and Grace was totally oblivious to it. And every night I had to go to the hospital smiling and saying, oh, I've had a busy day, when my wild world was in absolute turmoil. Thankfully, she was spared the whole problems and the sense of injustice that we've all suffered.
It must be strange now, depending on a service which you once ran.
Yes. Can I tell you a funny story? There was very few light moments in my life, but when Grace was in the acute stroke unit in the Royal in 6AF, a gentleman, a member of staff, came up to me. He didn't know who I was, but behind him was three nurses. And he said to me, this is disgraceful, the heat in this ward. I says, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write to the Minister of Health. And he said, do you know him? I says, I do. What's he like? I says, he's an absolute tyrant, but I think I can approach him. And the three nurses behind me are absolutely killing themselves because they were in the joke. Now, that is probably the only light moment I've had in the last 5 months. Everything else has been absolutely wretched. And it has been a desperately difficult time for me. But I feel a sense of relief that I've now enabled to tell the world my side of the story, both in the media and on the Nolan Show. And therefore, I'm hoping people will understand that it was a perfect storm of circumstances that led me into a terribly difficult situation.
It must be very rewarding, though, Jim, just to see the good work that goes on within the health service, something that you set in motion, and to see it up close and personal like that on a day-to-day basis, that whole experience.
It has, because the stroke occurred on the 3rd of February and I spent many long nights, all-night sits in the hospital with Grace. I got to know the staff amazingly well. I got to see, on a practical level, the pressures and the difficulties of working in a ward, the pressures on consultants, the shortage of resources at times, and when this is all over, I want to personally write and thank so many people who have made a really important contribution to Grace's recovery. I watched very carefully to see if my wife was getting any preferential treatment. I can assure she wasn't, because one night in the Royal, they dumped her into an all-male ward. And I thought, if this is preferential treatment, well, you know, that's a bit odd. We have an excellent health service. If you can get through the doors, I think it's second to none. And certainly I have seen some remarkable recoveries and excellent work at every level. But I think I came out of it with a much deeper understanding of the health service and the pressures it was under. And I really wanted to go ahead with the main minister, because I had an excellent private office team led by Pamela Baxter, super bunch of people who are in contact with me almost every day since I left, and they've been excellent. And I just felt I was getting a handle on the complexities of health, and then suddenly in 17 seconds it crashes around my head as a result of something I didn't do, and I feel a huge sense of injustice about that. I may well have had to go fairly soon after that, but it would have gone on totally different circumstances.
Has it soured your view of politics at all, Jim, the whole experience?
Me complaining about a poor press is like the P&O ferry captain complaining about rough seas. I have to accept it comes with the job. Mm-hmm. You have to take it on the chin. But I do feel aggrieved that after 33 years of working to reach what was the pinnacle of my career, 8 months later, it crashes in a very controversial and, frankly, a very humiliating way. And then in a way, I discover I didn't do it. And that saddens me greatly. But my family have stuck by me, and some of the backbenchers at Stormont have been great. They've been very supportive of me. Peter has been very supportive. He understands my situation. So therefore, I continue on as a backbencher, and I'll just have to see what happens next March when the decision has to be made.